Dive into the world of dance at the Victorian College of the Arts. Their program offers a unique blend of artistry, performance, and a choreographic practice within an inclusive environment. As an undergraduate student, you explore contemporary dance, physical theatre, ballet, urban dance, and more in a collaborative studio lab setting. At honors level, specialize in performance skills, choreographic practice, or dance research. Plus, benefit from the proximity of local choreographers and companies including Philip Adams, Stephanie Lay Company, Lucy Guerin, Chunky Move, and Dance House. Through professional placements, their students have the opportunity to develop pathways for their future careers through these relationships and networks. Consider a variety of bachelor, master's, and even doctorate programs available according to your needs. Join them and unleash your artistic potential at the Victorian College of the Arts. Learn more through the link in the descriptions below. Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup. Thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this weekly podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. For this episode, we take our first steps into art management and learn how to start your own dance company. My guest today is one of the most prominent figures, not just in Malaysia, but the entire Southeast Asian dance scene. He is a versatile performer, prolific choreographer, and one of the most influential educators around today. Professor Joseph Victor Gonzalez is currently the head of academic studies and postgraduate program leader in dance at the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts. Most notably, he is also the founder and artistic director of Ask Dance Company, which will be the focus today. Welcome, Joseph. It's such an honor to have you here on The Background Dancer. And as we take our first steps into art management and learn how to start your own dance company, it was definitely no other option for me but to start with a fellow Malaysian, a mentor, a friend, and one of my foremost inspirations. So once again, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, you're most welcome. Yeah, I'm very happy to be able to share anything that I know and experiences that I've had that can in some way stimulate further thought and discussion, perhaps also inspire other people to who want to walk this journey, or maybe clear the path a little bit for others so that they may know the pitfalls. So thank you. And yeah, I'm happy.
As a Malaysian dancer, when the company was initiated in 2011, I was taking my first steps into dance, and therefore I will start this conversation with a quote that reads, "Starting a dance company is not for the faint-hearted." So in your opinion, who is starting a dance company most suitable for?
I think there is no one answer to that question. I think it's always about what are the motivations for people to start their companies, how they want to run it, what purpose it serves. Is there a particular sort of vision that they have, which calls for the company to be started? If I look back into the dance history of Malaysia, there aren't really very many private professional dance companies that employ a certain number of people. There are many, for example, dance schools, as you well know, as you're a Malaysian as well, you've been there. So dance schools are registered companies too, but their intention for the establishment is really to facilitate the dance exams and maybe school concerts and so forth. For a performing company, presently, actually, there are literally only two that have and employ full-time dancers, which is Dua Space Dance Company and the Ask Dance Company. So there are many, many reasons why I decided to start the company. Having said that, I want to roll back the years into the 90s when Actor Studio was launched in 1994, when they had their space, you know, in Dataran Merdeka. There were also a great deal of opportunities open to people to stage work that did not require a great deal of finance. We did not need to go to the National Theatre and say, I want to book your theatre. Nobody had that kind of money to do it. So the emergence of the National Arts Academy at that time, the emergence and the presence of Five Arts Centre, they were really moving and shaking the industry in Malaysia at that time. And many individuals in the 90s returned to Malaysia from their training and their performance careers overseas. So I could go to people like Ida Redza, Chuti Kwang, Lok Sok Kim, Suhaimi Maggi, Lina Ang. All of us returned to Malaysia at that period of time. And in fact, every single one of us started our own companies. We registered our companies so that we could operate in certain situations which needed a company. I don't think anybody was really focused on a company being able to establish a huge name, but a company that would enable us to maybe collect tickets and earn some money and get some sponsorship. And there needed to be a structure that allowed us to have a company. And also perhaps once or twice a year, a company that we would stage work under that was according to our own vision. So many, many, many people had, but those companies actually were not employing a large number of people. They weren't employing anybody actually. So they were just employed maybe for the project. And the project could be very short or very long. Maybe duration is variable. So there were those kinds of companies emerging. So as I mentioned, all the people that I mentioned, every single one of them had their own companies at that time. And then you see that people who work in television, actually, they have their own companies too, because the TV, they need to employ a specific company that will, for example, provide the entertainment for Hiburan Minggu Ini or whichever the program was at that time. I can't remember. But you fast forward the clock about 15 years, and then I realized that there was a need that was born out of different circumstances. And that's why I decided to start Ask Dance Company in the year 2011. We're 10 years old. So this is an amazing time to have this podcast, Jason, and talk about it.
What were the seeds of Ask Dance Company and how did you develop its artistic vision?
This is not easy, yes. And it's not as if there are a lot of other people who share this dream and this vision. So the reason being, I felt that finally there were large enough groups of dancers graduating from local universities or returning from overseas that needed a place to continue their training and to continue developing their skills. And I thought that was the reason why Malaysia needed to have a company like the model you have everywhere else in the world, you know, Cloudgate Dance Theatre or Alvin Ailey and so on. So that was my vision and the reason why I decided I would start a company too, having very little idea of what it needed to start a company, actually.
What are some of the challenges regarding that?
For the most part, having a company, which basically is in Malaysia, there are different types of methods of registration of companies. So, for example, a sole proprietorship is easier to register and it doesn't have that many overheads and requirements. Whereas the company that I registered is a private limited company, and private limited companies required more stringent management in terms of the finances. There needs to be declaration of the income to the income tax department that's done annually. You need to have a company secretary and so on and so forth. So it's really very much more convoluted. However, the reality was that I knew that at some point I would also want to be asking for donations or looking for sponsorships and so on. And all these people would need legitimate companies that have a good record of their finances in order to convince them that they would want to invest some money in a production or so on. So I think the primary reason that I started this company was because I felt that after 3 to 6 years of training for a lot of the students that I was working with at that time at Aswara, which was the National Academy for Arts, Culture and Heritage, so many years were spent. And this kind of training wasn't really available in Malaysia at that time. Under one roof, you could study contemporary dance, ballet, Chinese dance, Bharatanatyam, Malay dance, improvisation, composition, lighting, sound management, stage management, and so on. But what was important for me was the answer to these questions that I was asking, which is, where and what do these students and these graduates do upon graduation? What opportunities exist for them that we can actually push the art forward a little bit more? One important fact was, while we were in Aswara, we were producing work under the college banner that was already, you know, making waves in the Malaysian dance industry. I mean, the productions that we were doing, such as Gelombang Baru for young choreographers, Jamu for the teachers' choreographies, Tapestry for traditional work, these were already getting noticed, for example, by Kaki Seni Bo Cameronian Arts Awards. From the first moment they launched Bo until this year, we've always been winning awards under some banner or other as a school production, and despite the fact that it was a school production. So what saddened me was I felt that a lot of the graduates were ending up after graduation working at the National Theatre or the Department for Arts and Culture, government companies, which is the bulk of the opportunities for work for dancers or musicians who don't want to work freelance. And this was sad for me because I think after 6 years of training, or 3 to 6 years, depending on whether they did the diploma or the degree, what was very frustrating was you end up being in service of the needs of the ministry or the minister or tourism, which, you know, you wear beautiful costumes and you look very nice and you take good photographs and you try to encourage people to come and visit Malaysia, truly Asia, and 8 steps to the right, 8 steps to the left, circle forward, circle backwards, and so on and so forth. But after all that painful dance training, I really wanted the dancers to do more. And I felt that there was a group of dancers who did want to do more. Now, mind you, not everybody actually does want to do more. And I don't want to judge whether it's good for them or anything. But I did feel that there was a need for dancers to have a space to continue to push themselves even further. And my motto in dance training, as you can see, my motto in dance education has been the introduction of the multiple genres of dance. I felt that because we were situated in Malaysia, it was necessary for everybody to have a basic fundamental understanding of what Malay, Chinese, Indian, Sabah, Sarawakian dance was, the traditional forms. I thought it was essential for dancers to then study ballet, to study contemporary dance, to do improvisation, composition, and also to have all the theory required of a dancer, such as history, anatomy, and to look at dance ethnology, research methodology when they get into the degree program. Criticism, aesthetics, and so on. So this was a very intense program that we created in Malaysia, and the results were amazing. And I felt that my company would need to reflect my philosophy of dance education. And therefore, that was what I, quote unquote, sold the brand as the branding of the company. So it's interesting because at that time I also had completed my PhD, and the thesis was actually transformed into a book called Dancing the Malaysian. So there are all these theoretical concepts and constructs of identity, interculturalism, intraculturalism, what happens when cultures meet. You know, what are the negotiations? What are the discussions? So my whole study was about that. And, you know, I felt that this was really an extension of all these things that were happening. An extension and also a confluence, you know, it was a bringing together of my concepts of education, my own education, my own writing, the things that I thought Malaysia needed. Now, don't forget, Jason, you know, you've grown up in a Malaysia that was very different from the Malaysia that I grew up in, you know. In a Malaysia that I grew up in, we were very, very much less fearful of the other. There was not such a rise of Islamic forces in Malaysia. And I'm very, very thrilled that the Johor Sultan today states that, you know, Chinese and Indians are not Pendatang, and they are Bangsa Johor and Bangsa Malaysia. And for a king of Johor to come out and say that, one, it's a very good sign, but two, it's also worrying the fact that he needed to say it. You know, we are a 60-year-old country and you still need to say this. So I feel that my politics also is reflected in the dance that I do, and I like it to be reflected in the company. So the company is very multiracial and of multi-religious beliefs, you know. So that's the reason for setting it up.
My guest today is Professor Joseph Victor Gonzalez. He is the author of one of the first books regarding Malaysian contemporary dance, including Malaysian Dancecapes and Dancing the Malaysian. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we will continue to explore how funding affects running a dance company. My guest today has been Professor Joseph Victor Gonzalez. Prior to his tenure at the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts, he also served as the Dean of Dance at the National Academy of Arts and Heritage in Malaysia. So, and what about maintaining the company in the long term? Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe who this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show.
Oh my goodness, Jason, I don't even know where to start to talk to you about the challenges that we have faced, you know. Firstly, of course, the most fundamental thing that every company needs is a very simple and not so easy to acquire, which is finance. So, you know, we need to find sponsors, we need to find donors. And that, until this very moment, is something that we work on constantly. So when I decided that I was going to start a company, I decided that I would have to find funding, right? Because dancers need to get paid. And that's a basic premise with which I'm working with. You know, I'm not going to ask somebody to work for me and not talk about how much money they're going to earn. So I had to knock on so many different doors. You know, Malaysia has, you know, a list of people, corporates that have a history of supporting the arts. So, for example, you have Maybank that support Bernard Goh and his drum group or musical theatre from time to time. You have YTL that was very instrumental in developing Kuala Lumpur Performing Arts Centre. You have even other funders like a Mercedes. You have HSBC who come out from time to time and say they want to fund the arts. So I wrote letters to every single one. You know, I literally go through the yellow book. If people remember in telephone directories, the yellow book is the list of businesses. So, of course, people listening today, those things don't even exist. It's much easier in the sense that you can find everything on the internet, right? So I wrote all these different letters and many people responded and said, sorry, we're not really interested to hear what you have to say. Other people didn't even bother to respond. But, you know, we had our own guardian angel that descended upon me and responded most beautifully, which was the Sime Darby Foundation. And very interestingly, Sime Darby Foundation had actually just been established like 6 months to a year when this letter arrived at their desk. So I think the timing was very fortuitous. You know, it was really the stars coming in alignment. And I didn't know anyone in Sime Darby. These were not personal friends that I could knock on doors. I mean, I don't come from a privileged family that has a list of titled people that I could ask for help. Everything that I have has been worked for and earned the hard way. And I love it, you know. And that's how it started. It started by Yayasan Sime Darby, or Sime Darby Foundation, deciding to fund an outreach project, which was at that time called Connecting Communities. It has evolved And today it's called Forging Traditions. And they are still our funders after 10 years. You know, it's incredible that they decided that they would want us to be one of their flagship programs that they have under one of their five pillars. So a very well-organized foundation. And not just standing by and giving you the money and saying, okay, you just go and do what you want to do. And then we'd like to see the results. We want to look at the reports. No, they were very interested to see how we were going to develop and what kind of role they could play in our development as a company as well. But it required a lot of, you know, negotiation and convincing them, you know, this is not a company that after 10 years is going to be making a million ringgit a year. You know, we're not. Because if we are going to do a show, for example, the chances are you're going to lose money on the performance, aren't you? Once you pay the musicians, the rentals, the lights, the sound, and so on. So there were a lot of things to consider. And this has been constantly a battle, not with Sime Darby, bless them. The amount of money actually that they have been giving us in the last few years has reduced, because they are expecting us to be able to do more work on our own and to generate income. And we had a plan. We had a plan that our studio space that we rent will be able to generate some kind of income. But, you know, we've all been hit by the coronavirus, so no income is being generated from there. I'm very glad and touched by so many people who reached out to us, and we were able to collect some kind of donations to keep afloat and look after the rentals and so on. In all this time, we have continuously reached out to different funders. Last year, we got a new funder on board called the Creador Foundation, and they give us a small amount of money. And this year, fingers crossed that we'll be signing a contract to get the sustainability fund from Chandana.
I'm really curious, are there any differences pertaining to either private or governmental support?
I don't really see that's a big issue in this situation. Firstly, Sime Darby now funds a lot of the arts companies in KL. You know, so as a private funder for the arts, I think they have been richly rewarded and recognized for the work they do in helping different people stage their work, such as Mavin Poo. Sime Darby is a huge funder of KLPAC, Five Arts Centre, and a whole host of other people. Now, when we talk about funding in Malaysia, there's always a lot of murky waters, because one never knows where money is coming from and whether the money is going to be sustained over a period of time and so on. I'll give you an example. I think it was about 10 years ago, maybe. Well, the government decided that they were going to actually disburse finances to individual companies and individuals, and they decided to work through two organizations. One was Kaki Seni, and one was my performing arts agency at that time. So there were two different types of grant systems and programs that were rolled out almost simultaneously by two different organizations, but the money actually was coming from the same source. So this is how incredibly weird Malaysia can get. But there were no real stipulations about what we had to do. They had a list of criteria about the kinds of work that they wanted to fund. You'd apply for it, and whether you're successful or not, that's another point. But for example, the Kaki Seni people had a mentor-mentee program where a young person would choose to work with a senior mentor and stage a work. And there was quite a lot of money available for that. So some of my dancers I know worked on that, and I was a mentor for one of their productions. And then they also had a internship program where a person could apply for a grant and get to work with a specific company if that company accepted them as an intern. So in terms, to answer specifically your question about whether there's an issue about whether the source of funding is private or government, at the moment, there's absolutely no conflict of interest. There are no stipulations about what we have to do, because they are the ones who come out with certain stipulations of what the grant is for. And there's no sort of underlying subterfuge, and it's very transparent, at least so far. I mean, this is the first time we're getting that big sustainability grant. So we are very excited, very, very thankful. It's really helping us sustain. So we want to push through with Sime Darby being the primary funder for our big Forging Traditions project, but now we have somebody else who's coming on board and we can do other things, you see, because Sime Darby never funded other productions, for example. They often came out from our own pockets, you see.
And what about the times when you were not successful in acquiring funding?
So again, you know, something happens, something emerges in Malaysia, the arts community gets really excited. And I'm always right at the front line, always there applying for whatever I think is available. You know, I don't believe in complaining and I don't believe in playing the victim. I really want to be proactive with this. So we'd apply for everything. But in the early days, yeah, so I was very fortunate with some funding from Kaki Seni. We also got to stage the first work for Ars Dance Company, which was called Woman on Top, with Kaki Seni funding. So that was the start of it all, you could say. Well, the start of the next 10 years. With my part, I can't quite remember what the funding programs were at that time, possibly because Ars Dance Company didn't get any funding from them. And then there was the Royal Arts Gala, which also rolled out a certain amount of money. We didn't get any money from them either. And then, you know, Cendana is only about maybe 5 years old, I think. They are rolling out different kinds of funding. So recently they had a Create Now funding. So I publicize as much as I can on Facebook or social media, telling other people, young people, you know, please go and apply for these things, you know. So they give you not a lot of money, maybe about 1,500 ringgit to create something. What was interesting is that we, as Ars Dance Company, we applied for the Create Now funding to do a dance film, which is only 3,500 ringgit. But we got it. And so we made that film out of from a shoestring budget, but it was very good. They also have other types of funding, which is development fund, which I think some other groups I've heard of got that. And also funding to travel. I know Terry and the Cuz got quite a lot of funding to go to New York to do his work. So I'm also always equipping myself with information about how much funding is available, who gets what funding, because I need information is knowledge. You know, you need to know what's out there instead of just sitting down and saying, oh, you know, we don't get anything, or accusing some other person of getting too much, but really equipping yourself.
Thank you for listening. That was part one of my conversation with Professor Joseph Victor Gonzalez. In the next episode, we talk more about how Ask Dance Company intends to push for international recognition and also how it's developing its company members with regards to both professional as well as personal achievements. Last but not least, what are the near as well as distant plans for the company? Check the show notes for more information regarding the company as well as his personal work. Kindly share your feedback either by the Apple Podcast, Podchaser. You can also email me at backgrounddancer.jy@gmail.com. That's backgrounddancer with two D's. And most importantly, leave a thought on social media. I'm on Facebook as well as Instagram. Sign up for the email list to receive weekly notifications as well. And definitely join the Facebook group as a member of our community. Stay tuned and see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe, comment, and leave a review on your designated podcast and social media platforms. If you found this interesting or helpful, feel free to share with members of your community so that they too may connect with us in our quest to foreground dance in the background. I'm Jason Yup of The Background Dancer, and as always, catch you next time. If you're listening to this, you are most definitely a dance enthusiast, maybe even one for dance science. Well, why not join the International Association for Dance Medicine and Science, or IADEMS for short, and become part of a global community dedicated to supporting dancers and performers worldwide. With active members from over 50 countries, including experts in dance, medicine, and science, IADEMS provides a diverse network of support and resources. As a member, you'll gain access to exclusive benefits such as discounts to year-round events, their vast collection of e-learning opportunities, and a subscription to the Journal of Dance Medicine and Science, amongst other incredible and unique offers. Join the mission for better outcomes and apply for an IADEMS membership today. Click the link in the descriptions below for more info.